Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast, on a Friday night, February the 5th, 2016. I'm Dre, he's Jay. It's time. It's finally here, that two-week-long wait, which seems so long. It seems longer every year. The wait, it's interminable. It takes forever. You get the craziest questions on media day, and they get crazier and crazier as the week goes on. Finally, in a couple of days, will be finally time to play football and decide the NFL champion this year in the 50th edition of the Super Bowl. We call it the Super Duper Bowl around here. And Jason, it can't come soon enough. God, I can't wait for them to play some fucking football.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm totally on the opposite side here. I thought the last couple of weeks just kind of breezed by, but that's what having little children will do to you.
Yeah, you weren't keeping up with the media and all the different storylines and all the different garbage that was going on. So yeah,
no, it's sort of liberating, honestly, to just not have to deal with the 24/7 news cycle for two whole weeks leading up to one football game. You know, we get a long wait in college up until the national championship game, but it's nothing. It's not one tenth of 1% as crazy as the wall-to-wall coverage that we get for the Super Bowl. It really is an American holiday. It's for a lot of people probably bigger than the big holidays. You know, it's for this is it for a lot of folks. So I'm excited that there's going to be a game on Sunday. It's the last meaningful football that we're going to see for 8 months. And, you know, 7 months, and then it, you know, sort of puts us into off season mode, and then we get into baseball. But yeah, it's finally here. Not very exciting for us for our picks, since you were already crowned the champion after me guessing incorrectly about which game you were going to pick incorrectly. And it for somebody who's just listening for the first time, it's all very confusing. But don't worry, Andre won the picks title, and I already congratulated him last week, so that's all you get.
Oh, well, I'll take it. I had a very scary thought. If they had those college kids on a media day and they had a whole week to grill them and pick them apart and do what they do to the pros, can you imagine how horrible that would be? Oh, a bunch of 19, 20-year-old kids just barely got out of their mother's house, don't know anything about the world, sitting up there getting grilled for hours by reporters just trying to do anything they can to find anything to write about. It would be even uglier than what the NFL does.
Well, you'd find out pretty quick the character and the attitude and demeanor of these kids, you know, getting asked the same stupid, if you were a sandwich, what kind of sandwich would you be? You know, I'm just the craziest questions. The media day alone, people dressing up in costumes, it's all such a joke, but it just shows you the penetration into the lives of everybody for the NFL. Those people who aren't football fans will watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's what the commercials are all about, to get the housewives that usually don't care about football, to get them interested. It's a big day for commerce. It's a big day for football fans. It's a big day for everybody. Like you said, it's basically sort of a national holiday, although I'll be working this coming Sunday.
Me too. But I get off at 5.
Okay. Right, I get off at 4:30. So, yeah, we'll both be in front of our TVs in time for the kickoff, right, at least we hope.
So I will literally get off work at 5 and drive to a Super Bowl party and probably get there at 5:20. You know, the food will probably be mostly eaten, but they'll probably be good partying since 2. But that's fine. Then the beer will still be cold. My wife, my kids will be there. So it'll be a good time. But speaking about the commercials, mm-hmm. remember a few years ago when you had the big backlash at the NFL draft of them cutting to the guy sitting in the room getting the phone call before they announce which team had drafted them? I'm starting to get that way with the Super Bowl commercials. You can watch them all right now. So what's the point?
It's a lot of spoilers out there, Yeah, I agree.
All these Super Bowl ads are already being released. It's taking it away for the people who do watch to see the ads at the Super Bowl. So many of these commercials, there's going to be no surprises because my feeling is probably 60-70% of the ads that are actually going to air during the game, you could probably just go watch on YouTube right now.
That's true.
Enough.
Yeah, but I think that's only the people that are that interested in it that are going to go seek it out and search it out. I think 99% of the country aren't going to have seen those ads before the Super Bowl starts. That's only for the people that love the spoilers and can't wait to see the early ads. So that's only for a select few people. I certainly don't know about any of the ads and certainly I'm not going to go search them out and seek them out because it doesn't interest me very much at all. But so you didn't see any of the media. I have to admit, I didn't actually watch Media Day or Media Night now. I think they actually put it on prime time on Monday night, believe it or not, to get ratings, to put it on TV. Everything's a thing. Everything's all about the ratings. It's all about the money. You know, that's what everything's all about, to make more and more money. I got to play Mr. DiBiase in honor of that. Is there really a need to have Media Day at night like that? What's the point of that? Seriously, who watched that?
I didn't, obviously. I'll tell you how disconnected I've been from all the Super Bowl coverage and everything. I forgot we had a show tonight until about 7:30. I had made plans to go with my wife tomorrow night, and I was mad at myself because I thought I was going to have to tell her that we couldn't go because I thought the show was tomorrow night.
So then I'm fumbling
back through my emails and everything in there and my texts to you, and I'm like, oh, whew, the show's tonight in 2 hours. Oh, okay, I better start preparing.
As much preparing as you do. The funniest part about that is Friday at 9:30 p.m. was whose call? Who made that,
mine.
That time?
I picked this time. So
you're the one who said Friday at 9:30, not me.
I was very prepared for last week's show.
Well, good. That's your star turn. Yeah, that's your baby.
When I do take my responsibilities with the honors and dishonors and the hall of infamy, I take those very seriously.
It's just the rest of this bullshit that you don't care about.
Well, no, I with the making picks and everything, you know my pick method.
Yeah. About 5 minutes before the show starts.
No. I can't say that's never happened.
Uh-huh.
But no, this year I was much more, I was usually going through everything on Friday while I'm at work, I'm bored. And I'd hit the cover site, I'd start looking at things. Okay, you know, I'd start do a little reading. And then when I make all my picks and I get home and kind of double check them and confirm. But most of the things that come out of my mouth are completely unprepared.
Oh, that's the fun of the show.
It is.
Very spontaneous.
Yes. That's what I got to keep you on your toes. I got to have you come up with something so outrageous that you forget to hit the audio drops for when I tell jokes. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. Hang on.
It's not forget. It's that I have so many damn drops here. I have to scroll down looking for the particular drop that I'm looking for.
Does it have a way for you to sort them?
They're sorted alphabetically, but
oh, okay. So
in the heat of the show,
You don't have them sorted where, like, the ones we use the most are at the top of the list.
Right. No, it automatically sorts everything by alphabetically.
Ah, but okay.
In the heat of the show, with me not really being experienced at this, and I'm not a producer, I'm not a talk show host at all, I tend to forget that the yeah is down at the bottom of the page because it starts with a Y. So then I'm scrolling. Where's that drop?
Yeah.
Where's it? Oh, there it is. And then
well,
the hey,
too,
hey
yeah.
is with an H, and then I have to scroll back up to look for the H's, and oh, where is that? Oh, there it is.
Well, I hope you never get a Jack Brickhouse drop, because then we're going to have no idea which one it is, which hey, we're going to get. Are you going to get hey?
Hey!
And that's not Jack Brickhouse. That's Krusty the Clown. That's a different hey.
No, Jack Brickhouse, if that was Jack Brickhouse now, it would sound like
If we have a Jack Brickhouse sound from right now, that's a news item.
That would be
a story.
It would.
You mentioned honors and dishonors last week, so that gives me an avenue to do a little plugging away here. If you like what we do, and God knows why you would like that,
before every show, I hit the numbers for our listens. They're up.
Yeah.
So somebody's those numbers cannot be you and me, because then the number would be two.
Exactly.
So there's definitely people listening to this show. But the trend I noticed is that the numbers add up big about two or three shows behind. So I have a feeling that we have people listening, but they're archiving, or they're catching us on TuneIn, mm-hmm. or they're catching. So I think that's what's happening, is that we're catching people who are listening to our show well after the fact. But
that's interesting.
Listen.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing. And without listener input, without people actually telling us what they like or dislike, it's completely up to us to figure out why the numbers will be going up. Because I would get the first thing I would guess is that people are noticing our successful season of picking and how great we were to toot our own horn overall for the season. And, oh, wow, these guys kind of know what they're talking about. I guess I need to give them a listen. But that doesn't back up the numbers going up like in the older shows. The older shows don't do you any good if you're trying to bet for this coming week, of, you know, in the playoffs or this for the Super Bowl here. That doesn't do you any good to listen to our show for our weekend, because that doesn't really help you.
I honestly don't think anybody is listening to our show to bet our picks.
However, would have made money this year if they were.
They
so maybe they need to start doing that.
That's right. Yeah, considering we were both pushing, what, 540 win percentage, 54%. Both of us were within a point or two of 54%, which is just, I mean, yes, I was the loser, quote-unquote loser, this year because I had a pretty awful postseason. But there's no denying the fact that you and I had a pretty amazing regular season to be pulling 54%. Now, for people who don't know, 54%, well, that sounds like a terrible number. You try it.
Yeah, against the spread, not straight up,
you
folks.
You try it, because we had friends that we used to pick with. We're lucky that they would break 30%. We also keep track of the professional, quote-unquote professional guys who picked that. And I don't think, when you gave the numbers, I don't think either one of the guys that you tracked broke 50% either.
No, that would be the Yahoo shutdown corner blog picks every game against the spread. They were under 500 for the second year in a row. Well, I take that back. One of those years that I was tracking them, they were just as awful as you can be. They were like literally 40 games under 500.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago. That first
year. Yeah, it wasn't
year,
last
that
year.
That
year
guy
before.
Got on our radar, and he was 45 games under 500 or something
he
ridiculous
was
like that.
Absolutely awful.
And for people who don't realize, the Yahoo shutdown corner, the guy who picks the against the spread, the only reason he got on our radar was because I caught him taking credit for a pick that he won on a Friday for a Thursday night game by saying that he forgot to tweet it out or something like that. And I was like, you know what? You can't count that. That it doesn't fly. You cannot basically I had that one. Yeah.
I'll never forget it. It was where the year that Halloween was on a Thursday, He claimed he forgot to tweet his pic out because he was trick-or-treating with his kids or something. But he had to, he still had the pic. He claimed
he had the pic,
even though he forgot to completely forgot to tweet it out. But he had it, and he counted it on his season stats, which in my world is complete and utter bullshit. But,
which is fine, because you were still 45 games under 500.
Yeah, if you count that, you're 45. If you don't count that, then you'd be 46.
46.
So,
yeah, it's not
either
like
way.
You're not really impacting anything. So you know what? I guess 2 years after the fact, we'll let them have that one.
The excellent website Pro Football Focus also has a man picking against the spread every week. And as intelligent as his analysis may have been, he still was under 500 for the season as well. So we, again, like to toot our own horn. When we get it right, we let you know. And we got it right a lot this year.
There's a method to our madness here.
Yeah, we don't know what it is, but there is some method to it. Absolutely.
Right. And because there's just, you know, you're the stat geek, and I am just flying by the seat of my pants.
But we both have in common, we like to keep it in a lot less detail than you'll get, like, on the ESPN pregame shows and the other pregame shows. That's why our show is named In Much Less Detail, because we still like to get to the heart of the matter. There's still a battle between two teams, one of which almost always is just better than the other. And we like to get right to the heart of the matter and break it down and see, well, this team is going to win because of X. And we don't like to mess around with a whole lot of difference. I am more numbers based, but at the heart of the matter, we still try to cut through the bullshit and give you the straight dope as best we can. And we're definitely not professionals at this. But again, we're pretty damn good at what we do, apparently. And, like I said, we'll let you know when we have no clue. But we had a clue this year. 536 percentage for me, and 540 for you. Was it the other way around? No, that's correct.
I finished ahead of you. I was like one game ahead of you, I believe.
That's correct. That was before your 1-10 postseason.
No, I think I had two.
Nope. And, New England in the conference semifinals was your only victory in the postseason.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was rough.
It was bad. I won one wild card weekend. And, it was 0-4.
That's right.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
And that's usually the sad thing is the postseason is usually where I shine. Yeah. The problem was I had a lead. You always had the big lead, though, in the past, before we had the podcast with people. Andre would always have the huge lead going into the playoffs, and then by the end of the second round of the playoffs, it would be gone.
Right. You would just go perfect through the first, like, two weekends, and I'd just be gagging it up, and it's like, what the hell happened here? But not this year.
Yeah. So all I had to do was have one more win. This is the sad part. One more win in the postseason, and this game mattered tonight. That's telling me yours wasn't much better.
Well, that's true.
We won't get into the numbers, but the fact that I won 1 out of 10 games and still had a chance last week to bring this thing close, it tells you our point system is wild, and it definitely keeps it tight and it keeps us important all the way through. And it also tells me that you weren't exactly blowing me out of the water there.
Yeah, my 5-5 is not very impressive, but compared to 1-9, it seems like a world beater. So,
but the sad thing is, if that was 2-8, I could still win this thing.
You could still win it, absolutely.
Yeah. So a 2-8 record in the postseason, and I still could have beaten you. Oh, I love it.
So again, for those of you who enjoy this for some unknown reason, you have a few different ways to listen to our shows on archive. You can subscribe on iTunes if you search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, or you can go to the app TuneIn, and we're on there as well. Search for In Much Less Detail. Or you can come back to this live show page. The only place you can listen to the show live is right here on the website blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. And on that page, there's an archive tab where you can go find our shows, all the shows we've ever done. We have no shows that we deleted. Everything is raw and right there for you. Some of them are humorous as far as how terrible they are, and some of them are actually kind of funny because we kind of know what we're doing sometimes or what we're talking about.
We had a whole show dedicated to porno titles.
A whole after show, we should say.
Yeah, a whole after show. Yeah, don't forget the after show is sometimes
right.
even better than the regular show.
We got an hour live here. We're 20 minutes into it now, and after this is over, we'll have another hour or so of an after show, which the only place you can listen to that is on the archive or subscribing to the show through iTunes. Also, all our picks are up on the blog to check out our numbers through the years. We've got 6 years of picks up on our blog, and the website for that is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. If you ever want to communicate with the show, you can call now during the live portion. That phone number, as always, is area code 646-595-4534. If you want to let us know your picks for the big game, for the super-duper bowl, the 50th version of it coming up on Sunday. You can also tweet at me. I'm at IMLDDre, and you can tweet at Jason. He is at IMLDJTG. And you can always do the old-fashioned email and send an email to the show, and you would send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. So no shortage of ways to let us know why the show sucks or why you enjoy it or what we can do to improve it one way or the other. By the way, while I'm thinking about it, a quick little rundown of our off-season program that we like to do here on our show. After the football season is over, we'll do our off-season shows, which will be heretofore titled Kings of Non Sequitur, a little more family-friendly version. We used to call it Open Mouth Say Shit, but we'll clean it up a little bit starting this off-season. We like to do our March Badness picks. We like to do our college basketball picks, which is a funny show because we discuss college basketball 0% before we do our picks for March Madness.
That is the only show all year
that we talk college
basketball. We average roughly 50 or shows a year. You know, with all the shows that we do. You know, two a week during the regular season. We've been doing one a week. So, and then we'll do a show during the off season about, well, I would say, what, twice a month during the next, over the next, you know. And if something comes up every once in a while, we'll throw, you know, hey, we need to talk about this. We'll have a show tomorrow night or something, just to kind of get something in there if it's topical. Yeah, 50 shows a year we talk about college basketball once.
Once.
Which is more than we talk about hockey, tennis.
Yeah. There will not be a Stanley Cup Finals
roller derby,
podcast.
Tiddlywinks. It's more than we talk about any of those things. So college basketball at least gets one.
There will not be a National Spelling Bee podcast. Before that, actually, our first off-season show, and probably our most popular one by the numbers, is when we have Dave, the movie expert, on, and we do an Oscars preview, which is also hilarious because neither one of us watch any of the Oscar-nominated movies.
When are the Oscars?
It's sooner than we think. I want to say it's towards the end of this month.
I want to try to make it a point to at least watch, because there's one or two of the movies. They have 10 movies, isn't it? Ridiculous, like 10 movies.
I think that it can be as many as 10, but I think depending on how bad the year is. For instance, I want to say this year there's only 8, but I might be wrong about that.
So those other two, fuck off.
Yeah, we couldn't find two other good ones, so we'll just take these 8. And again, I'm not a movie expert at all. That's why we have Dave on. But if I may be so elitist as to judge the quality of the movies, I think one of the movies might be the Mad Max reboot that got nominated for Best Picture or something like that.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it, so I shouldn't prejudge it like that. But it's
supposed to be an awesome movie. Yeah.
It's Mad Max. I can't. That's like nominating Terminator for Best Picture. I just can't. I can't wrap my mind around. I might be wrong
Mad
about
Max.
That anyway.
The Road Warrior, the second Mad Max movie, is one of the best movies possibly ever made.
Really?
It's an incredible movie.
Wow. Okay.
It's simple. It is very simple. It's very to the point, but it is a reasonably good story, action-packed. There's a lot going on. It's not just simple. A lot of people kind of like view the Mad Max movies because of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. That was about the point when it became popular. By that point, it had sold out. The franchise had sold out. It became 80s glorified kind of like schlock. And no, but yeah, the first Mad Max movie was a weird little movie. Everybody was overdubbed, and it was really weird. I'm not joking. And then the second movie was incredible. Absolutely amazing filmmaking, that second, The Road Warrior. Excellent movie. Violent. Very violent. If you like your movies violent and rapey, then you're going to want to see The Road Warrior.
Okay. Highly recommended by Jason there. So, yeah, our most popular show of the year, the Oscars preview show with Dave. I will try to get a hold of him once again. He's a little hard to communicate with. He seems to kind of go in and out. He does his own thing. He's a lone wolf, but I'll try to get in touch with him coming up very shortly. We have Jerry the movie expert on to discuss Jerry the wrestling expert, not the movie expert, to discuss we have a WrestleMania preview. And the reason that's funny is because usually neither one of us actually watch WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Or
right.
You not being a wrestling fan really at all, sometimes are more likely to actually watch WrestleMania because you might go to somebody's house and see it. Whereas I'm absolutely resolved to sit here in my house and not order
WrestleMania last year.
There you go.
I watched
the year before,
I believe. I watched the Raw before WrestleMania, which I do. It's the one time I will sit down and watch wrestling all year. I do it for this show. I do my research because it's like a soap opera. All you got to do is watch that one and watch everybody point up at the WrestleMania sign, and you know what's happening. However, I believe I correctly predicted the swerve at WrestleMania with the
yes.
So there you go. And I only watched it once.
The last WrestleMania, you said that the Brock Lesnar Roman Reigns main event would somehow have a swervy kind of finish, and that's exactly what happened
with
Seth Rollins cashing in
the
Money in the Bank.
Exactly. So there you go. And I don't watch wrestling, and I actually called that one. So
the year before that, I will take credit for saying that Undertaker was going to lose his streak to Brock Lesnar because the run-up was so one-sided. Undertaker was just beating Brock Lesnar's ass at every turn on every Raw leading up to WrestleMania. I said, this doesn't smell right. Because usually the guy that gets his ass kicked every week leading up to the big match, then he goes on and wins the big match. That's just how wrestling gets booked. It doesn't really make much sense. But it smelled funny, and I called it, and that one I got right. So, again, we're not experts at it, but sometimes we actually know what we're talking about. So we have Jerry on to discuss. That's the one that we know when that show is going to take place. Whatever the go-home version of Raw is, we'll be on live at 10:30 Central Time, 11:30 Eastern, after that go-home Raw, and we'll be on the air for an hour to discuss what we think is going to happen at the upcoming WrestleMania. We have a baseball preview show because we're both very, very big baseball fans where we try to figure out what's going to happen. The reason that show is funny is because baseball is completely unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen in a baseball season because it's so damn long. It's 162 games, and then the playoffs start. That's a whole other season in and of itself. So you can take your best guesses as to who the best teams are going to be and where they're going to finish, but it doesn't always turn out the way you think it will. For instance, we've thought the Washington Nationals are going to be pretty damn good the last couple of years, and what's happened to them? It hasn't gone well.
Off the rails.
Completely off the rails. So, but we still love baseball. We still love discussing it and trying to figure out what's going to happen. In conjunction with baseball, we're in a big money fantasy league with a bunch of friends up in Chicago. The commissioner of that league, David Lewis, it's one of the oldest fantasy leagues in the country, if not the oldest, the Ad Hack Fantasy Baseball League. We like to have the commish on for a show. We had him on a couple years ago. It was a great show. Scheduling conflicts took place last year. We weren't able to get them, but we'll give it another effort this summer and try to have one show, at least one show, with the commish of one of the oldest baseball leagues in America. We have a NFL draft aftermath show. We don't do a draft preview, but we like to take a look after those first couple of nights of draft coverage and all the happenings there and who's going to make a fool of themselves and who's going to do the money sign as they walk across the stage.
And who'll draft a Wisconsin running back? Oh, my God.
Yeah, that too. and who will have a bad pick and who will have a good pick and who will have something in between. So we do what we call NFL draft aftermath sometime after the first couple of nights of drafting. We have, like we said, a few shows here and there going in and out as events warrant in the sports world. Last year I had a cruise podcast. I went on a cruise and then came back and broke it down and gave the full breakdown as full as I could possibly give, every possible detail about the cruise. Well, we're going on another cruise this summer, so we'll be coming back sometime in July with another.
You're not going to go get the Zika virus or something or whatever it is, are you?
I sure hope not. We're looking out. We're being very careful as far as where we're going and what we might need to bring as far as, like, insecticide and things of that nature. Because we are going to where some of these different mosquito viruses have been passing around down in Honduras and Belize and in Mexico this time around. So hopefully we make it back. And if we do, I plan to come back and do another cruise podcast. And then, of course, the last week in July, the Hall of Fame / Hall of Infamy. It's our own version of the Hall of Fame where we induct people, places, and things. We induct whatever we want to induct into our Hall of Fame / Hall of Infamy, including last year, Jason starting a new trend of inducting phrases. We went beyond people, places, and things, and we started inducting very important and very famous phrasing and words from the NFL in the past. And that was an interesting little twist that opens up a sort of a new wing of the Hall of Infamy that I'll probably add to this year, you know, because there's so many different things that you can induct, things that people have said throughout the years that are infamous.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
No. Can't wait.
Just a couple of the things that were inducted into the Hall of Infamy last year, and
that's right.
This year will be my turn to add to the festivities.
That's right. That was a fun show. I gotta say that was a fun. I've gone back and listened to that one a few times. That was a fun one.
Yep. You never know. I think Kirk Cousins is a little young to be inducted,
You like that? You like that?
You know, sometime in the future, perhaps.
Yeah, I got a feeling Kirk Cousins, that phrase, because he won't get it. He's so mediocre.
Oh, no.
And so he's not getting into either hall. He's not getting into ours or the NFL. So he rides that perfect line of mediocrity. So this might be the only thing he gets into a Hall of Fame for other than, like, his high school.
That's probably true.
So
the big game coming up on Sunday now. Before that, before we get into Denver, Carolina, if we want to step back to the last weekend and look back at the conference finals and how these two teams got here, you talk about two very different ways of winning their games. The way Denver beat New England and the way Carolina beat Arizona. What jumped out at you? What stood out to you the way these two teams got the job done, respectively?
Denver's defense. Really, really jumped out at me because Arizona just imploded. I mean, that was just, you know, that whole thing just blew up. All those turnovers that Carson Palmer didn't have in the regular season, he was saving them. Yeah, old Carson Palmer, interception Santa. We stayed away from that name this year because he was playing so clean at MVP caliber. Levels,
yeah.
All year long. He was right there 1-2 with Cam Newton in that discussion all year long. And earlier in the season, when Arizona was really just housing people, he probably would have been it had he maintained that level of play all year long. But that thing went so ugly so quick with all those turnovers, special teams turnovers. They couldn't stop turning the ball over. Carson Palmer on 6 of the 9 drives that the Cardinals had turned it over.
That's a lot of turnovers.
So yeah. So what really stood out to me so it's really hard to judge Carolina. I mean, yes, they created these turnovers, but it's really hard to judge a team on its effort when the other team is just falling apart, right? It's like just literally right before your eyes, just going to pieces. Denver, on the other hand, I thought impressed me more. And it took everything that they had to beat New England, because even with all the pressure, all the sacks, all the hurries, getting Brady just looking like mopey and down in the dumps, they still had to stop a two-point conversion to win that game. And basically, had Gostkowski not missed that extra point, that game could be tied. You know, you never know how things are going to turn out, because that, you know, you don't want to go all like butterfly effect. But let's just say he makes that and everything happens the exact same way the rest of the game, and they get that touchdown. Then all of a sudden now another extra point ties that game, and we could be going to overtime, and New England very easily could have won, even despite being completely outmatched, outclassed by Denver the entire game, just up and down the field. The Denver offense did what it does. We can't really knock that Denver offense. They have not been impressive all year. This is what we get with Denver. And this is the sort of that wild card to me in my mind going into this game against Carolina, because as dominant as Carolina looks, that Denver defense could show up again. We don't know what we're going to get. Denver's, to me, more of an unknown than what we're going to get from Carolina. Because Carolina's going to come out. They're going to play hard. They've got all the swagger. Cam Newton's going to bust his ass the whole game long, make something out of nothing. But I really don't know what we're going to get out of Denver to me at all. So I did find that effort of theirs very impressive. The Von Miller and all those guys firing off of the ball, I mean, they were in the backfield at the snap, it seemed like, on almost every play. So I'm going to give all the credit in the world to Denver to overcome their offensive deficiencies, and basically that defense just decide they're going to win the game by themselves.
It was incredible. It's what they did all season long, too. They had the mediocre offense, whether it was Peyton Manning quarterbacking or Brock Osweiler, whether it was C.J. Anderson trying to run the ball or Ronnie Hillman trying to run the ball, whether it was Vernon Davis or Owen Daniels trying to get open at tight end, whether it was Emmanuel Sanders trying to get open, whether it was Demaryius Thomas getting open and just dropping the ball. You know, whatever you looked at the Broncos, the offense was kind of sputtering along and never looked very clean all season. It really did not resemble an offense that you think would go very far in the playoffs, and that defense just bailing them out all year long. Almost every game, it seemed, the Broncos defense rose to the occasion and did what the offense really couldn't do, which is put the games away. The offense sputtered along and you can count on, one hand, the number of games that the Denver offense won for them in their 14 wins this year, counting the playoffs. Memorably, that New England game comes to mind where C.J. Anderson runs off left tackle and goes to the end zone. But the defense was so key in all those other victories, and they did it again against the Patriots. They did the one thing that we said you had to do to beat Tom Brady, which is bust him in the fucking mouth. And Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and the rest of the Broncos defense just kept coming and kept busting him in the fucking mouth. And the defense had to do it because, again, the offense was sputtering and mediocre. Peyton Manning gets those first couple of touchdown throws to start the game and does pretty much nothing the rest of the day. The running game is up and down and inconsistent. Big runs off left guard by C.J. Anderson every now and then, but other than that, pretty much nothing. So the Patriots' offense was mounting the big comeback and trying to get back in the game and get to within a couple of points. And like you pointed out, the missed extra point, so huge, because now they get the touchdown to Gronk, they get to within 2 points, and instead of just kicking an extra point and tying the game and trying to once again hold down the Broncos offense and force overtime, they have to go for two, don't get it, and Denver winds up holding on by the skin of their teeth. Also, the Patriots need to be pointed out and criticized because they got a little too cute. Because going for two, they get the touchdown to Gronkowski on fourth down. Excuse me. It was pretty obvious. That was the only thing they could really do right, was throw it up for Gronk and let him make plays. Nothing else was really working with any kind of regularity. I have no idea why they didn't do that again going for two. They roll left and try Julian Edelman and Aqib Talib tips it away. I have absolutely no idea why they didn't just throw it up for Gronk again. Just do that until they stop it, because that's the one thing the Broncos couldn't stop. And New England got too cute. They had a fourth and one earlier in the game with about 6 minutes left, and they tried some sort of play action toss back to Edelman, which was a smackdown. That was too cute. There were some situations to me where the Broncos were just dominating the game physically, and the Patriots had maybe one or two things that they were doing right that they needed to pretty much just keep doing until the Broncos could stop it. And one of them is just go to Gronk. And the Patriots couldn't do it. They did not have the creativity they had too much creativity, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Is Boy Wonder Josh McDaniels tried too many things instead of just sticking with bread and butter. I know the Patriots aren't used to sticking to bread and butter. They're used to innovating and zigging when you think they're going to zag and zagging when you think they're going to zig. But in this game, where it was obvious that they were physically overmatched and just were not going to be able to hold off the Broncos defense, they needed to just keep doing the one or two things that was working for them, and they were too cute and weren't able to do that, and that's a big reason why they lost that game.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just the whole game, though. The defensive pressure that they were getting up front on Peyton Manning it wasn't even, like, incredible, like, blitzes. It wasn't anything exotic. It's basically the only way, I'd say the only way you can really beat the Patriots, unless they're just having an off day, is you got to get quick pressure from your front line, your main line guys. You can't be sending, like, crazy, like, corner blitzes and safety blitzes or bring in the house, because Brady picks that to pieces. But if you can get pressure with three or four, then you can really make his day miserable. And the number of hits that he absorbed was somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 in that game. So tons of
the most
of
he ever absorbed in a game, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. And there was nothing dirty. You know, these were just legitimate
pressures,
hits, sacks, and they still only won the game by 2 points. That's a testament to both the Denver defense, but it's also a testament to the Patriots and what they do and how close they came to what you predicted and taking that Deflategate thing and shoving up everybody's ass. Almost.
Almost.
Almost. But I'm glad they're gone. I got to tell you, glad they're gone.
You're well on record as saying that you were hoping the Patriots would get beat. You said that multiple times throughout the year, and then finally came through.
Yeah.
You picked them to win.
I did actually pick them to win. That was the one I didn't disagree with you on, and I should have.
That's right.
But we both said that it was going to take a perfect effort from Denver's defense to win, and we didn't see that happening because of the way the Patriots looked the week before, just picking people apart. And, well, hey, guess what? That Denver defense, they stepped up.
As they have all year long.
Again, yeah. So, again, we underestimated that Denver Broncos defense again.
And it's a great point by you that it's kind of hard to go all in on the Carolina Panthers, although a lot of people are, judging by the point spread and judging by the media hype. But it's a little hard. There's a couple of things that scare you about trusting the Panthers and going all in. And number one, as you mentioned, is how good are they really beating up the Cardinals like they did last week? The Cardinals are a very good team. At times we thought the best team in football they look like in the regular season.
Yeah.
But that version of Carson Palmer was not the version of Carson Palmer that played all season long.
Yeah, that,
Whatever the issue was, it might have been an injury. We
it
talked
could
about
have been that
finger.
Finger injury, yeah.
Whatever the deal was, that was not the same guy. Not even close. And it's really hard to judge if that was because of what the Panthers' defense was doing or because Carson Palmer physically just broke down and gave all he could in the regular season and didn't have anything left by the time the NFC championship game came along.
Right. So, you know, we're just left wondering, have we seen the best of the Panthers? I think we saw the first half against Seattle was what we saw. That's the best of the Panthers. But you look at just how the ugly picks that Russell Wilson was throwing in that game, and then just all the turnovers. Oh my God, the turnovers against Carolina that Arizona was just doing. I mean, that's just horrible. Now, Broncos offense can be a little charitable. Peyton Manning his touchdown interception ratio this year was dismal. It was better once he came back. He's been a little bit more careful with the football, but his numbers were nothing spectacular. That entire Denver Broncos offense was nothing spectacular. But we've seen, and this is the scary thing in picking this game, is number one defenses do really well in the Super Bowl. So
this is the third year in a row that the number one defense is playing in the Super Bowl. All this offensive juggernauts, all the rule changes, everything that the NFL is trying to do to make offense as spectacular as possible to get more eyeballs on the screen. And this is the third year in a row that the league's number one defense is in the Super Bowl following the Seattle Seahawks the last 2 years in a row.
Right. And the Seahawks should have won both.
They sure should have.
So everybody's pointing to a blowout, and I'm not giving away my pick, but everybody's pointing to this blowout. That Denver defense scares me. That's the scary thing for me, even in making the pick. And the pick doesn't count for anything for us. But that's the one thing where, let's say, you know, you go one way or the other. Well, hell, let's make the pick. Damn it, I'm tired of skirting this subject.
All right, you heard the man. Let's get to it. Super Bowl 50, Super Bowl L. If they're not doing the Roman numerals anymore. This is the year where
they're not doing the Super Bowl. They're not doing the numerals this year. Next year they're going right back.
They are?
Yeah.
Really?
I heard that somewhere. I could be wrong.
This would be Super Bowl L. I guess they didn't want a big L on the field. Loser. They wanted to avoid that. I understand that. I didn't think there was any chance in hell. You heard something, and I haven't heard it, but that doesn't mean it's not true. The reason I wouldn't think they would go back to it is because next year would then be LI, and then LII, and then LI. I wouldn't think the NFL would want that on the field either, because it would just remind everybody that Roger Goodell and the NFL like to lie, lie. I wouldn't think they'd want that on the field either. So. Although maybe 54, they could go back to the Roman numerals, because then that would be LIV, and then the NFL could lie again and pretend like the NFL is all about live. We like to live. So they can go back to lying if they do that. But anyway, Super Bowl 50, the 50th version of the big game, the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers, the 14-4 Denver Broncos, the 17-1 Carolina Panthers. If you consider this a road game for both, the Broncos were an impressive 6-2 on the road this year, and the Panthers were an even more impressive 7-1. Weather conditions will not be an issue. It'll be a beautiful 71 degrees and hardly any breeze out in Santa Clara, California. So it's Denver, Carolina. This point spread, if I remember correctly, started in the 3-4 range.
It started at 4.
Okay.
Depending
on what book you were using, it started somewhere in the 3-4 range and basically has skyrocketed ever since. I've heard it as high as 6 in some places. Just blows my mind. But hey, the Panthers have been awful impressive this year, especially in the playoffs. So can't really blame, I guess, the public in that respect. The little bit of injury report would be that, of course, Thomas Davis got his arm busted in the NFC title game and immediately had the surgery so that he could have basically the 2 weeks to heal up. And he plans to be out there. So he's a boss just for even trying to be out there. I don't know how effective he's going to be. Jared Allen also is supposed to return from a hurt foot for the Panthers. The spread, according to the source that we always use, which is the covers.com free handicapping contest, as of when we went on the air, Carolina was a 5-point favorite, according to them. Again, depending on where you go in Vegas, you can get it as high as 6. I can't imagine it's going to stay that high. I think the sharps will probably come in on Denver and bring that down before the game starts on Sunday. But for our official pick, we're going with Carolina minus 5 points. Jason, who you got?
Well, I'm glad we're not picking head-to-head or anything. This game matters. This is a tough one. Cautiously optimistic that I'm going to pick here Carolina, but that's a lot of guarded optimism with Carolina because I love what they're doing. I love what Cam Newton did all year. Carolina does play good defense. Josh Norman, probably going to be defensive player of the year. We talk all about Denver's defense. Carolina, they're not a bunch of slouches out there on defense. That's always been a pretty tight defensive squad under Ron Rivera. But I love the dynamic aspects of that offense with Cam Newton. He can stand in the pocket and throw it. If that pressure does not get to him and he's a hard guy to bring down, he will run and kill you with his legs. But where am I worried about this pick is the Denver defense. That's one angle that I'm really worried about because if they're playing the way they're capable of playing, they could beat anybody. Good defense will always beat good offense. We've always seen that. The other angle, and this is sort of that intangible angle, is if we get Peyton Manning standing in that locker room before the game saying, hey, this is my last game, and this is sort of like a win one for the Gipper kind of thing with Peyton Manning, we could get a balls out crazy Denver just effort, to send Peyton out as a champ. Now, that might not happen. He could play like garbage if that happens. But if that happens and that team gels around him and you've got receivers going and getting balls they've been dropping all year and that defense firing like crazy, Denver could hang in there and possibly steal this thing. But I do think that Carolina is the stronger team, the better team, and on a neutral site, that crowd's not going to be able to give the Denver defensive line that jump like they were getting against Tom Brady and against New England. So I'm going to go with the Panthers here. But like I said, I'm glad I don't have to pick this one to actually make it count. So a little relief from me.
Well, I definitely agree that it's not an easy pick. That spread is so close to a touchdown. And as great as the Panthers have been all year, to say that they're a touchdown better than the Broncos, the number one defense in football, that's hard to imagine. But I think there's a few factors in play to make the spread where it is. As you mentioned, Peyton Manning absolutely could play like complete caca in this game. And it shouldn't be surprising. It was very surprising to me a couple of years ago when Peyton Manning got to the Super Bowl, faced the number one defense in the league in the Seattle Seahawks and played like caca. It shocked me, but first of all, you started off terribly with a snap behind his head for a safety by Manny Ramirez, the center. So you got off to about as bad a start as you could possibly get off to, and it never got better from there. But I didn't know Peyton was that close to breaking down physically as he was, and over the next couple of years, it's borne out that he really is not anywhere near what he used to be, and everything he does basically is sort of reaching back from his past and pulling out these throws that just barely get to his intended receivers. They're thrown in just a perfect spot, and there's no other spot that it could be thrown in or else it would be picked off or incomplete. So it would not be the least bit surprising if the Panthers won this game running away because the other team's quarterback wasn't able to do anything offensively. He had that time off, and he's looked much better since he came back in the second half of week 17 against San Diego. But it's still not the old Peyton Manning. That Peyton Manning's dead. It's never coming back. I understand that. You mentioned Peyton's regular season stats and how ugly they were. I had to write them down so that I could repeat them on the show just to remind everybody what we're talking about here. This version of Peyton Manning this season put up 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. He averaged 6.8 yards per pass attempt, which is terrible for him. And he had a 67.9% passer rating, which is also terrible for him. But that's what we're dealing with right now. He can be worse than even those numbers, as he proved against Kansas City. And he can be much better than those numbers. He had several games where he looked like, okay, well, maybe he's still viable. Maybe he's still got a lot more than we think he does. And he could be somewhere in the middle. He's really the X factor for this game, although I'm not going to name him my X factor because that's a little too obvious. But it really is up to Peyton Manning how he performs, whether the Broncos can be a formidable whole team or if they're going to have to rely on their defense to bail him out and win this game, as they've done all year long. I had to laugh at him, Peyton Manning, sending goons to Charlie Sly's house, the guy that busted him on the HGH accusations on Al Jazeera. It's hilarious. So Peyton's sending goons to the guy's parents' house. He's trying to scare the hell out of this guy, obviously. And through all of that, Peyton Manning still has not sued Al Jazeera for any kind of false information. So that's
and he won't. And he won't.
Still sort of telling to me. There's a couple of baseball players that actually did sue him. Ryan Zimmerman and Ryan Howard actually did file suit against Al Jazeera, but Peyton Manning still hasn't. I guess he's busy, you could possibly say. It's got to be his last game, though, right? I mean, as bad as he's been.
Yeah, he's done.
He's got to do the win one for the Gipfer hype in the locker room before they come out. It's got to be. He's probably going to run out of the field with tears streaming down his face or something like that. Here's another little X factor for the Broncos. Will Demaryius Thomas get over his early shaky hands syndrome? There's been some talk about that. He even admits he's so nervous at the beginning of games that he's more prone to drops. And it certainly seems that way when you watch the tape. He likes to put the ball on the ground, especially early. And he's going to have Josh Norman covering him, so that might be even more of an incentive to be nervous. How about Eugene Robinson lives? You saw that tweet that I sent you about the practice squatter for the Broncos, Ryan Murphy, his brother getting busted for trying to solicit a prostitute. Like, these guys don't learn.
Oh, boy.
How do you do that? How in the hell do you, after all these years, Eugene Robinson sort of comes roaring back? On the Carolina side of the ball, there's a couple of question marks that I wonder about. Cam's not one of them. Cam Newton, I think, is as solid as any quarterback's been this year. He's going to win the MVP. We've talked about that. My question is about how great Luke Kuechly has become in coverage, because that was one of their sort of weaknesses to me at the beginning of the year, that linebacker coverage of tight ends and wide receivers was not a strong suit for Carolina. And all of a sudden, Kuechly's flying around the field and intercepting balls and going for pick sixes. And it's like, what else can he do? He's now a great coverage linebacker, too. What else can he possibly do? But on the other side of that is Thomas Davis. You talk about a great tackling tandem, those two linebackers. But now Davis with that broken arm, I'm sure he's going to get all, you know, numbed up, and he's going to go out there and he's going to give it his all. His legs are fine, so they're going to work. He's going to get to the ball carriers just fine. It's when he tries to wrap up and take down an angry person trying to win a Super Bowl, which he has not done. Whatever he did in practice this week, he did not try to tackle an angry man who's trying to win a Super Bowl. That didn't happen. So that's the moment of truth. We'll see if he's still going to be effective at that point. It's Super Bowl 50. You would think it's going to be a great game. It's going to be a great atmosphere. I'm calling a very ugly defensive game. I mean, very ugly. I have Carolina winning this game 16-9. I love the under in this game. slam the under. I think both these defenses are going to come out and just leave it all on the field and just be bloody and just kill each other. And I think it's going to be just one of those ugly, knockdown, slobber knocker type of games. More on our after show when we come back. Now into the VIP after show program where we can discuss our X factors for the Super Bowl and a couple of little prop bets and whatever else is on our mind. So, Jason, yeah, who's your X factor for the Super Bowl?
You know, I hate to say this. I thought about this one actually long and hard. And with this, the whole, it could possibly be Peyton Manning's last game. Which it sounds like it's going to be. Did you hear the, you know, when he actually ran up to Bill Belichick after they caught him on audio saying, "Hey, this is probably my last game."
Yep.
So I have a. They're already putting the thing out in the media. He's announced to his. So you've got this whole narrative of, you know, Peyton Manning, like John Elway, trying to win that Super Bowl, riding off into the sunset. My X factor is going to be this officiating crew. The one group of guys out on the field who could keep this game close is the guys throwing the flags. If we may see some penalty assisted drives. I don't think anybody wants this game to be an ugly blowout like we had 2 years ago. So I hate to go all conspiracy theory here, but my X factor is, unfortunately, the Zebras. We can see the negative impact that those guys can have on a Super Bowl. And I always reference that Pittsburgh-Seattle Super Bowl. The worst Super Bowl ever, by the way. That Pittsburgh-Seattle one where basically, and even to this day, people will readily admit that, yeah, they kind of screwed Seattle out of a Super Bowl win, you know. Or at least from keeping that game from being more competitive than it was, which was actually a very competitive game and a very ugly game. Just ridiculous penalties up and down the field in that game. And those guys, we'll
Super Bowl where
the
Matt Hasselbeck was called for a personal foul after he threw an interception because he tackled somebody low. He made a tackle and was called for a personal foul.
He was called for an illegal block on a tackle
after
he threw an interception.
That happened. Go back and watch the tape, folks.
The thing, it was real. It was ridiculous at the time. They took away a touchdown from Seattle in that game on an offensive pass interference that was just phantom. I mean, was not a thing. So, yeah, that game was clearly hampered by the officials. And I've got a weird feeling like we could see some Zebra shenanigans tomorrow. Not tomorrow, on Sunday.
This from the New York Times, from writer Victor Mather. Referees have made a lot of news this season, not all of it favorable, and the NFL will hope that the Super Bowl is not remembered for another officiating blunder. Perhaps it is odd, then, that the league has chosen Cleet Blakeman as the Super Bowl 50 referee. He struggled to flip a coin successfully earlier in the playoffs and also played a small but vital role in the Deflategate contretemp. A misadventure the league probably wants to forget. So there you go. Cleet Blakeman at the head of the officiating crew for Super Bowl 50. And he's the guy that tried to flip a coin for the Packers-Cardinals overtime. And it didn't flip. It went straight up and came straight down flat. And he said, "We got to reflip this because I just became the first guy to flip a coin and it didn't actually flip." Hopefully that's not a sign of what's going to happen Sunday.
I mean, it didn't even bounce and turn over.
That was strange. That was very strange.
Straight up in the air, flat, and landed flat. That's not easy to do.
The Broncos apparently were 5-0 this season with Cleet Blakeman as a referee. If you are into conspiracies,
dun dun dun.
I don't know what they were against the point spread, but 5-0 in games with Super Bowl referee Cleet Blakeman. So there you go.
Wow, how many officiating crews are there that one team gets a guy five times?
Yeah, that is a little strange.
There's got to be 16 crews, right? I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah, obviously.
Games. So think about that, though. There's 16 crews. You get one group five times. Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think there'd be a little...
Coincidence?
I think it'd be a little more evenly spread out, but actually it can't be that spread out because don't they try to funnel like the best crews to like the prime time games and the Broncos
yeah, so
are always on prime
time. The better teams would see the better crews a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they try to do it that way. So,
you know, yeah. So those Texans Jags games, it's like, hey, screw you guys. You're getting the worst.
Right.
You're getting Jerome Boger.
Oh no. The handful of Chicago Bears games I was able to see this year, there seemed to be a lot of Jerome Boger. So I guess that does make sense.
You're lending a little credence to my theory there.
I'm proving your point there.
Thank you.
My X factor for the Super Bowl is Mr. Blindside, because I was under the impression watching his play this year that he was basically still in the league because of the stupid book and the movie. He didn't look very good all season, Mr. Blindside, Michael Orr, the starting tackle for the Carolina Panthers. But no sacks allowed in the playoffs, so he's improved. But that's DeMarcus Ware's side that he's going to be manning there, the left side of the offensive line. So good luck, Mr. Blindside. You're going to need it. If Cam Newton has pressure and doesn't have time, because Cam Newton, more than any quarterback, likes to stand back there and really take his time. He really likes to stand there and survey what's going on, and he's as relaxed / lazy, depending on what narrative you're trying to build, as any quarterback in the league, and that's because of very good blocking along the offensive line all year. But like I said, by my eyes, maybe the Pro Football Focus metrics say something different, but by my eyes, Blindside wasn't very good this year. And he's got to be very good in this Super Bowl, or else DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller and the rest of them will eat the Panthers alive.
Well, that's interesting. You know, you almost have to attack Cam Newton the same way you attack, Big Ben. Basically, not the smart thing to do. I think I talked about this. I'm trying to remember which Super Bowl it was that I talked to. I think it might have been the Seattle Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, that the way that Seattle needed to attack him was to attack his arm. So you almost need to have Denver attacking that release, not the release point, but, you know, the where he pulls the trigger, when he pulls that back, kind of the way that Vic Beasley did when Atlanta beat them. So you got, you know, mm-hmm. instead of just trying to sack him, you need to try to catch him so that when he goes to throw the ball, you can swipe that thing out. And that's exactly the way that Vic Beasley got that strip sack against them to win the game for Atlanta. If he's going to stand back in the pocket and you can kind of create that little bubble to keep him standing in, the best thing to do is to kind of have that guy come around on the backside corner and just swipe at the arm instead of, because trying to just tackle him outright could be a bad move, because if he shakes that and then all of a sudden lanes open up, he will take off and run for 20, 30, 40 yards. He's athletic enough to do that.
You could embarrass yourself trying to bring him down as well, because you might just slide right off him because he's so strong.
Yeah. So, you almost want to attack that throwing point. That actually, I talked about that a little bit, that you see those big plays in the Super Bowls that kind of happen like that. You had Big mm-hmm. Ben against Green Bay, goes back to throw the ball, guy hits his arm, ball flails, pick six, you know. And plays like that had nothing to do with sacking Ben. That was all about disrupting his throw, and that's the way, because Cam Newton, most of his throws are deeper throws. I mean, he doesn't really seem too worried with the short and intermediate stuff. A lot of the plays that he makes with his arm are just laser beams out to guys you've never heard of, and they're on the money. I mean, he's definitely a pretty accurate thrower. So, but those plays take time to develop. So that if that Denver defensive line can get home, but not necessarily sack him, just disrupt his throws, you could create some turnovers.
You could almost say he hasn't had any pressure on him all postseason. The
That's
Seahawks,
true.
went down in flames so early, they didn't really contend against them. The Cardinals, sending all their different exotic blitzes, still weren't able to get home. And that's credit to, again, the Panthers' offensive line has probably been overlooked in their success this year. They've been very, very good as a unit. But, yeah, that's very interesting. If the Broncos can get pressure and affect the timing of Cam Newton, he won't have time to go deep on every throw like that. He'll have to rely on more short and intermediate things. Now, his intermediate game with Greg Olsen is stellar. But if they can find a way to cut that off or shut that down, maybe double-team him, that's not going to leave too many other options. It's going to be it might be the Jericho Cotchery possession show if they get to Cam Newton and affect his timing like that. So we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, all it takes to keep a game close is a tipped ball, you know, a stripped, you know, a fumble. You can really change the whole dynamics of a game with a turnover, especially an early turnover. Because Carolina, what they've been doing, running out to these huge leads these last few games against Seattle and Arizona, the games were basically just over. I mean, yeah, Seattle scored like a whole half's worth of garbage time touchdowns, and Arizona, that game got out of hand late really bad. And even for all their turnovers, Arizona was still kind of muddling in that game, even though it never really felt like they were doing anything. Once they got to, that was a 33-15 or something, okay, you know, ball, you know, lucky break here, turnover here. Nothing ever just materialized for Arizona like it did for Seattle with that comeback attempt. If Denver gets down, they're not coming back.
It wouldn't seem that way.
That offense is not geared towards comebacks. That offense is going to have to do enough to keep it close and let that defense just get after it. And if that defense isn't getting home and Carolina's scoring early and often, it's over. This is a game, if it's 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, turn off your TV.
Well, that offense could be geared for comebacks. They have some playmakers. The quarterback isn't geared for comebacks anymore because his body's breaking down.
Right, but the quarterback is part of that offense. So the offense is not geared towards comebacks.
Okay.
Is this really going to be Brock Osweiler's team next year? I mean, really?
Who the hell else is going to be? Is there a free agent out there that's any good? Because I don't think so.
Can they go get somebody? Can they trade for somebody?
I don't think so. I don't think anyone that has a decent quarterback, they're not trading them because there's so few decent quarterbacks in the league right
bad
now.
Quarter. Yeah, they're not going to go out there and get RG3 or Colin Kaepernick. Storm's coming.
Hashtag storm's coming. I don't consider them part of the decent quarterbacks out there. I don't know how good Robert Griffin can be again.
Right.
I know he had that charmed rookie season, but I don't necessarily think that he's destined to be great again once he gets out of Washington. Kaepernick, as we have observed many times, refused to grow as a quarterback after that unbelievable playoff game against the Packers. He basically stopped trying to do anything else as a quarterback and hasn't really grown at all at the position. And the other guy that was being talked about in the offseason as a trade target was Johnny Football. That guy appears to be the biggest train wreck in the history of the NFL because he looks like he's trying to completely self-destruct right now.
Yeah, he can just put a new name on his back that just says Chernobyl.
He's blowing up, and not in a good way.
He is going full-on nuclear meltdown. He has got the old China syndrome going. He is so nuclear. He is so toxic and nuclear that he is going to just melt through the ground and end up in China.
And Jerry Jones will still pick him up.
Oh, God. Could you imagine Johnny Football handing off to Darren McFadden and having Des Bryant out there throwing tantrums? That would actually be fun to watch.
Des Bryant would be exploding every play, every series he'd be coming off the sideline. What is this? What were you doing? You saw I was open. What are you trying to do? And Johnny Football would be sitting there going, I don't know, man. Just give me a beer. That's all I care about right now. Just somebody give me a drink. That's all I want.
That's really interesting that you went, you know, so low scoring, because I would actually think that low scoring would favor the Broncos. That almost has to.
here's how I see it breaking down, basically. I don't see either one of these quarterbacks throwing for 200 yards. Okay. I think they're going to engage in an epic, horrible, sleep-inducing battle of three and outs early in the game, because these defenses are just going to smother everything that the Panthers and the Broncos try to do in the passing game. And the only reason I have Carolina coming out with more than Denver and covering that point spread is because they're so committed to the run game that they're eventually going to break through on the ground, I think, and get the winning touchdown, whether it's Cam Newton diving in or Jonathan Stewart banging it home or Cameron Artis Payne or whatever. That's the only reason, really, that I'm sticking with Carolina. I basically had Carolina in my mind as soon as the conference title games were over. I said, I got to go with Carolina to win this game. But to cover the number, I was definitely waffling back and forth until I really got into it and tried to break it down. I think Carolina will run for over 100 yards as a team. I don't think there's any way Denver is running for over 100 yards. And as many times as Peyton might try to win this game with his arm, he'll probably have like 20 more pass attempts than Cam Newton in the game. But I think they're going to throw for about the same amount of yards, which is about 170, 180 yards. I just think whatever Peyton tries to do with that pop gun arm, Josh Norman and the Panthers will knock the passes away and bat him down and maybe intercept a couple. And Cam Newton with his laser arm has been awesome all postseason. But I think the combination of not having as much time as he's used to have, I think this will be the game of the three postseason games that Carolina's played where he'll have the least amount of time to operate. And the combination of that and Denver's maybe unheralded or underrated secondary players. Gotta love Chris Harris. Gotta love Aqib Talib. T.J. Ward, the heavy hitter at safety. I think they'll knock down their share of passes and maybe pick off a couple as well. I just think it's going to be sort of an epic back and forth of defensive battle. I talked about Denver with the number one defense in football, third year in a row that the number one defense is in the Super Bowl. Carolina's kind of not a slouch themselves. They're sixth. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
That's not bad. So I just think it's going to be a slugfest. And I don't love the point spread. Obviously, I got them winning by 7, and the spread is 5, so that's not much. So if you're going to slam anything with your money this weekend, slam the under. I believe the over-under is 44 right now. I would be killing that if I were in Vegas right now.
Oh, boy. That's not a good sign.
I think it's going to be a terrible game to watch. I'm sorry. That's just how I see it.
That's possible because, really, when you look at the possible scenarios, blowout for the Panthers is more likely than a blowout for the Broncos. I mean, I don't think either one of us see the Broncos going out there and just destroying Carolina. I don't even
know.
I'm not even fathoming that. Denver doesn't destroy anybody.
How can you destroy anybody when your quarterback comes in 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, and a 67.9 rating, folks? Come on.
That's – oh, man. And Peyton's your guy. I know that's got to be hard to see.
And he's still the better option of the two quarterbacks. I'd still start him over Brock Osweiler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what's telling is you watch these games with Peyton Manning, even going back a couple of postseasons where anytime he makes the right read – and he tries to float that deep ball out there, he just keeps missing guys who've got a step. And if you're going to make those throws, maybe he's just on adrenaline in this one. Maybe he's got a little bit more zip on that arm in this one. Maybe something's going to click for him. And a couple of those drop in, and this could be very interesting because there's a lot of reads that he's made. The brain's not his problem. He's making the right read. He's got the progressions right. He's finding the open guy. But then once the muscles tell the arm what to do and that thing kind of lets go, it's just and it just off target. You know, that's his problem. That's why he's done. It's nothing to do with the football mind or how the greatness that he had for as long as he's been in the league. He's been in the league a long time, 17, 18 years, just a long career. Hall of Fame career, no problem. Will go down as one of the best ever. You know, some people might even say the best. Or I like it with the I love the knock on him. He's the best regular season quarterback ever. Eh, this is his fourth Super Bowl. Let's not knock the guy. He's gone to four Super Bowls.
Yeah, it's so hard to get into that conversation of the greatest of all time. And you got Brady with all the Super Bowls that he's gone to and all his rings. You got Joe Montana still sitting there with four. It's so hard to figure out because you put them on teams with exactly the same defenses and who's going to come out on top. You know, I can't say that it wouldn't be Peyton Manning. I can't say that it wouldn't be Tom Brady. I can't say that Dan Marino, if you gave them all exactly the same defense, wouldn't come out with more rings at the end of their careers. Who knows?
Right.
And Marino's got zero rings. But it's one of those things that because Brady's got the rings and got the appearances that people want to anoint him the greatest of all time, and they kind of want to ignore the defenses that the Patriots have had, especially those early championships were definitely based on the defense more than what Tom Brady was doing.
Oh, yeah. And actually, when you get into that discussion, I'm one of these guys that I don't have – I don't consider Tom Brady the greatest of all time. I just don't. I consider him very good. In sort of.
Uh oh. You still there? I hope he didn't drop in the after show because you can't get back in if you drop. But he has dropped. Unbelievable. Oh, this is terrible. Our Super Bowl preview show, and we were in a good conversation too. And all of a sudden he drops off. That sucks. Man, well, there's a whole lot of stuff we still didn't get into. Jason was going on about how bad Peyton Manning looks physically. Oh, Jason just texted his power went out. Wow, well, that'll do it. That wasn't an internet droppage on his part. When your power goes out, there's nothing you can do about that. That's awful. Wow, that's some bad luck on Jason's part. So hopefully everything will be okay up there where he is in central Wisconsin with his family. I know they've been having some real bad weather in the Midwest this past week. We got a little bit of that down here in Memphis. Got rained on pretty heavy on Tuesday, and whatever rain that was apparently up in the Midwest, that was all snow at the same time. So we can't complain too much about the rain because it could have been a lot worse, obviously. But Jason was talking about Peyton Manning and physically just how bad it looks when he tries to gear up for that deep ball and tries with all his might to get it out there, and it just doesn't work out for him. And I was going to point out that we're seeing a version of Peyton Manning right now in the NBA with Kobe Bryant, because Kobe has those nights where he every now and then sort of resembles the old Kobe. The last couple of games that he's played, he's really had very good games, but for the most part this season, he's really looked shitty. I mean, that's about as nice as I can put it. Kobe Bryant has really looked like a shitty basketball player all season long. He looks like somebody that should have already retired, not wait till the end of the year. Despite the good games that he has every now and then, the decent games. Jason said it was his fault that his power went out. He stepped on the surge protector. Oops. Oh, dear. Okay, well, I'm glad for that, actually, because I thought his, like, power went out. Like, his house had issues. And that they were having, like, trouble up there, you know, weather-wise or something. So I'm glad it was something that he did, even though it's embarrassing for him to admit that. But, yeah, Peyton reminds me of Kobe when he gears up and tries with all his might to get that ball out there. And it just doesn't get out there the way it used to. It falls short. It's a lame duck, like Jason was saying. And it's heartbreaking to watch. Because of that whole greatest quarterback conversation that we were just talking about, where I can't engage anybody in the greatest of all time at any individual sporting position. I cannot get into an argument of the greatest baseball player of all time. I never saw Babe Ruth. I assume he's got to be on anyone's list of the greatest of all time, not just because of how prolific he was as a power hitter, but also that he racked up so many victories as a pitcher that's just unheard of. Jason said he felt like a dope when he realized that he stepped on the surge protector. Yeah, that'll I don't blame you, but, you know, accidents happen. But I can't get into the greatest baseball player of all time. I didn't see Babe Ruth. If you want to go by numbers and try to add up, you know, wins above replacement or something like that, then fine. But I saw Barry Bonds play. I never saw anybody more prolific than him at power hitting and affecting a game at the plate. No one affected a game at the plate quite like Barry Bonds. Was he roided up? Of course, obviously, look at him. But, you know, how can I argue against what I've seen? I saw how great he was. I can't get into the greatest basketball player of all time because I have a mental block. I've been calling Michael Jordan, the greatest of all time for years and years and years. And metrically, things that certain guys are doing in the game today, you can argue, make them better all around than Michael Jordan. LeBron James obviously does a lot of things much better than Michael Jordan ever did, such as defend. He's obviously not the scorer that Michael Jordan was. If you want to argue, he's not the cutthroat killer, vicious competitor that Jordan was. That's true as well. That doesn't mean he's worse at basketball. This run that Stephen Curry is on of what he's doing the last couple of years, I've never seen anything quite like that. Not just shooting, but creating his own shot. Sometimes that shot that he created is a crazy shot, and he nails it anyway. Sometimes the things that he did to create that shot was crazy. The ball handling was crazy. Like, you can't believe he did that, and he did it, and he stepped back and hit another crazy three-pointer. The percentages of distance shots, like not right on the line, but like 3 or 4 feet behind the line, the percentage of those shots that he makes is something just we've never seen it before. And obviously that's something Jordan could never do. It's amazing that Stephen Curry was the best player on a world champion, being as small as he is. It's not like he goes to the rim and throws it down every now and then. That's just, the paint really isn't part of his game at all. He's just pretty much doing it all on perimeter and ball handling. But he's doing it so great that we've never seen anything quite like that. I can't really get into an argument of the greatest basketball players of all time. I can just say what I've seen and how great guys have been that I've seen. And before all of that, Bill Russell is obviously the greatest winner in NBA history because he has, 11 rings, I think. How can I say he wasn't better than Jordan or LeBron or anybody else? Wilt Chamberlain is the only man to put up 100 points in an NBA game. How dominant was Wilt Chamberlain? Didn't he average 50 and 25 rebounds in a season or something like that? How can I say that he's not greater than Jordan or LeBron? Didn't Oscar Robertson average a triple-double in a season? How can I say he's not greater than Jordan or LeBron? And it's the exact same thing in football with this quarterback debate that people like to have. I totally admire Tom Brady and admit that what he has done has been incredible. He's played some incredible football, especially the last whenever they went and picked up Randy Moss, whenever the Patriots picked up Randy Moss, and sort of transform their offense from possession and just get the first down and keep the chains moving and bring in our big back, whether it's Corey Dillon or Antoine Smith or whatever, and rely on getting it done that way. When they went to Randy Moss after the Spygate thing and went with that perfect season and really took their offense to another level, ever since then, Tom Brady has been playing some hellacious football. And those last couple of titles that the Patriots won were not relying on the defense to help them win. It was relying on Tom Brady to be Tom Brady and help them win. He's been awesome. I still say Peyton Manning commanded his offense at the height of his powers, not just with the Colts, but then remember that first season he had with Denver where he broke a bunch of single-season records because he was just determined to show everybody how great he was. And if you think he did that clean, you're a fucking idiot, by the way. Of course he was taking HGH or whatever. Why shouldn't he? He was trying to be the greatest at his position, and he had one of the greatest seasons ever at his position, and he should get credit for that. If you haven't heard my drug stance or performance-enhancing drug or whatever, aspirin can be a performance-enhancing drug because it helps you do things that you couldn't do if you didn't take it. So shut up with the bullshit about certain drugs make you dirty, but others are okay. Fuck that. If it helps you perform, then it's a performance-enhancing drug. And I don't care about the discussion about why one is dirty and one is not, because they're all helping you. So I don't care about any of them, really. Just do whatever you got to do, man. You know, alcohol is a drug, too. I don't really care if you get down with alcohol or get down with heroin. If you have to take a drug to get through life, then that's pretty poor, regardless of what the drug is, whether it's a glass of wine at the end of the day or shooting up with a needle. I understand one is a lot more potent than the other, but either way, you have to get down with the drug, and that's sad. So that's how I feel about performance-enhancing drugs. But anyway, I still say Peyton Manning commanded his offense better than any quarterback I've ever seen. If you want to say that I'm saying that I think he's the greatest of all time, fine, whatever. But I can't get into that argument whether Peyton's better than Brady or greater than Brady, because Brady has so many more rings than Peyton. So I can't argue against that. All I can tell you is what I've seen. And from what I've seen, Peyton commanded his offense better than any quarterback I've ever seen. And that's just the bottom line. But that said, that's why it's so sad to see this version of Peyton, because this is Michael Jordan with the Washington Wizards, what we're seeing right now out of Peyton Manning. It's a guy that's clearly struggling to the end of his career that used to be great and is trying to do things the way he did it back when his body allowed him to be as great as he could possibly be, and it's just not there anymore. Father Time wins every time. Father Time is undefeated, as we all know. But I tell you what, if Peyton Manning finds a way to play well enough to keep his team around and finds a way to win this game, it'll be a hell of an achievement, even though I think Jason and I both agree that there's no way the Broncos are going to win this game over the Panthers unless the defense carries the day, unless the Broncos shut down Cam Newton and the Panthers' high-flying offense. Peyton Manning, being the leader of the other team, if the Broncos happen to push through and win the game, they'd probably give Peyton Manning the MVP just because of the storyline, whether he plays great or not. He's the next choice at plus 320, and then from there, it's silly. It's Luke Kuechly and Ted Ginn at plus 1,500, C.J. Anderson and Von Miller at plus 1,800, Jonathan Stewart at plus 2,000, Greg Olsen at plus 3,000, and it gets even sillier from there. So that's something to keep an eye on. Is there any way that the MVP of the Super Bowl would be someone other than Cam Newton or Peyton Manning? I think back to some of the funniest Super Bowl MVPs. Larry Brown for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Super Bowl 30, getting those couple of interceptions that Neil O'Donnell just laid right into his hands for the Cowboys. and he parlayed that into a big contract, I believe, with the Oakland Raiders, where he didn't really do anything ever again, but didn't have to. And similarly, on that vein, there's Malcolm Smith, who wound up winning the Super Bowl MVP the year that the Seahawks destroyed Peyton Manning and the Broncos a couple of years ago. And that MVP could have gone to anybody, but Smith happened to be the guy that had a pick six in that game, so they decided to give it to him. So that happens. It's a complete nobody out of nowhere makes a couple of big defensive plays and winds up getting the MVP. Or, of course, there's Timmy Smith, the Redskins running back many, many years ago that in the Doug Williams Super Bowl ran for a ridiculous amount of yards, you know, over 200 yards. And I believe he was the MVP of that Super Bowl. So it happens on the other side, too, on the offensive side as well, that sometimes guys have the game of their lives and you never, ever, ever expect it. Now, to put money on it happening, I don't know if I'd do that. But some of you out there are complete degenerate gamblers, so maybe you want to do that and look for a value. You know what? If I was looking on this list for a value, I'd probably go with Greg Olsen at plus 3,000. I think that's a nice value pick. I think the Broncos have trouble covering tight ends, and if they get to Cam Newton early and often like they did to Tom Brady, Cam's safety valve is probably going to be Greg Olsen. He'll probably have to throw 9 or 10 passes to Greg Olsen, just trying to escape pressure. And Olsen's athletic enough to turn those into pretty big plays, maybe even a touchdown or two. And some of the other props, missed extra point. Yes, it's plus 290. That might be a value, too, because of all these silly-ass missed extra points that we've had this year after they moved the extra point back so many yards. Yeah, I don't feel like talking about any more props. I think I'm finished. So for Jason, who unfortunately dropped after he accidentally kicked himself off the air, got to keep your feet away from the power strips, buddy. I'm Dre. I thank you very much for listening and hanging around for the after show, listening to me ramble. Our next show is going to be next week. We do a Super Bowl recap show. The next show after that is more than likely going to be our Oscars preview show with Dave, the movie expert. If I can get a hold of Dave, the movie expert, and get him to commit to once again coming on. It's always a great show. We always have a lot of fun. And we learn a lot because Dave is the one who actually sees some or all of these Oscar nominated movies, whereas Jason and I don't really get an opportunity to do that. So it's always fun to learn a little bit about those. But yes, next week we'll be back. If I had to guess, I'd say probably in the middle of the week, like Tuesday night. Wednesday night's my bowling night. So Tuesday night or Thursday night, we'll probably be back with our recap of Super Duper Bowl number 50. Whatever you're doing, enjoy your Super Bowl, whether you're watching at home by yourself, at home with a party, going out to a party, or not watching at all, maybe having to catch it on the radio if you're out and about or if you have to work or something like that. However you enjoy the Super Bowl, enjoy it the way you want to enjoy it. Have a great time. It's the American holiday, as we talked about earlier, even though Jason and I will both be working, which that says something, but I'm not bright enough to know what that says exactly, that we do a football show and yet we'll both be working the day of the Super Bowl. So go figure. I think I could have had the day off if I wanted to, but honestly, as I said, I'm going on another cruise this summer. I'm trying to save my vacation days. I don't want to burn up too many early on in the year, and then by the time the cruise comes this summer, that'll be the end of my vacation days. After I come back in July, I'm already done with my vacation days for the rest of the year. I don't want to do that. I want to have a few days left for the rest of the year at least. So that's what I'm doing. That's why I'm staying home this year or that's why I'm going to work this year on Super Bowl Sunday instead of staying home. But whatever you're doing, however you're enjoying it, I hope you enjoy it. I hope you pick the right team. If you're betting the Super Bowl, I hope you bet the under if you're betting the over-under, because I don't think there's any chance in hell this goes over 44 points. I think it's, as I said, I think it's going to be kind of a defensive struggle, a showcase of two excellent defenses that know how to stop various offenses, various offensive attacks. Both teams found a way to stop attacks all year long, really. And I think it's going to be another one of those. I think they're going to fill each other out early and just three and out, three and out, three and out. And eventually somewhere along the way, a big play gets made by the Panthers offense, and they come through with what I am predicting is the one and only touchdown of the game, which is going to be a rushing touchdown by either Cam Newton or one of the Panthers running backs. And that's how I see it breaking down. Like I said, Panthers 16, Denver 9. That's my official pick. Deal with it. Bet it or don't bet it, however you want to do it. But either way, like I said, enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday, and we will talk to you again next week. See you then.